This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. I'm Chris Stafford. And on the show this week, we're going to be hearing from Kathy Robertson shortly about the upcoming trainers conference. And after that, we'll hear from Regina Milliken, who is the manager at Oak Hill Ranch in Folsom, Louisiana. And finally, Kimberly Bench will be here to talk about the role of the working student. But first, news that the USEF Board of Directors has approved an addition to the rulebook, which outlines equine vaccination requirements at licensed competitions. This new rule came into force on December the 1st of 2015, whereby all horses entering the grounds of a federation licensed competition must be accompanied by documentation of equine influenza virus and equine herpes virus or rhinopneumonitis vaccinations within 6 months prior to entering the stables. The intent of this rule is to ensure that all licensed competitions comply with the vaccination guidelines for equine influenza and equine herpes published by the AAEP, the American Association of Equine Practitioners. These guidelines, which are reviewed regularly by infectious disease experts, recommend vaccinating competition horses at 6 month intervals for both equine influenza and rhinopneumonitis, that is EHV1 and EHV4. You'll find more information on this rule change on the USEF website at usef.org under USEF Drugs and Medications, or you can call 1-800-633-2472. And now the USDF Education Department Manager Kathy Robertson joins us to talk about the two Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conferences that will be held in 2016. The first one is on January the 18th and 19th in Loxahatchee, Florida, and the second one on March the 14th and 15th in Somers, California. Johan Hinneman will be serving as clinician for the Florida conference, and Stephen Clark will again serve as clinician for the California conference. Kathy, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
So, with the holidays approaching, all thoughts, of course, on convention, and then, of course, we get past that and we get into the new year, and two of the highlights really are the trainers' conferences, aren't they?
Yes, they are. This year, we are very lucky that we are going to be able to offer two trainers' conferences. One will be in January in Florida at our traditional weekend with Johan Hinneman. And then we will be heading west in March to offer trainers' conference with Stephen Clark.
Well, obviously, two very popular trainers there. Give us an idea of the format of those and how it compares to previous years. Have you made any changes? What can auditors expect?
Well, every presenter brings their own different style to the conference. The conference in Florida with Johan, I expect, will be more of our traditional format where we work our way through the levels, but we will be focusing primarily on the Prix St. George through Grand Prix. And in the West with Stephen Clark, he will not only focus on some training tips and exercises at that level, but he'll also bring his judge's eye and that perspective to the conference as well.
Now, how can auditors members find out about these, Kathy, the scheduling for these, the dates, and how they can register?
They can get all of the information off of the website at www.usdf.org. The January conference will be January 18th and 19th, and that will be in Loxahatchee. And our conference in the West is March 14th and 15th, and will be at El Sueño Equestrian Center.
Is there a limit to the number of participants, Kathy?
We have no limits on auditors, but they do want to check the website for the hotel information because the hotel deadlines close about a month prior to the events. And I know in Florida, once our room block is gone and our discounted rates disappear, the rooms go up significantly in price.
And this is a full day. Is it just run over one day, or is there anything the night before or the morning after that they should know about?
It's 2 days. Both of these are Mondays and Tuesdays. And we will have a reception on Monday evening at each event. So they'll get a chance to interact with our presenters and ask some questions, and we'll have a little educational presentation.
And what can they expect to take away from these, Cathy, that, you know, they can put in the bank, so to speak? I mean, do these, you know, do these compare over time? You know, can you go to two a year? Or, you know, how is it presented for members in terms of accessibility on an ongoing scale?
Well, we typically have one conference a year. This is, again, this year is unique because we have two. There are attendance criteria that they have to meet, and that is on the website as well. But we're really, you know, trying to focus on the FEI levels and provide some education for those trainers and coaches and writers at that upper level, something that they don't always have exposure to. Johan has not been in the United States very much, so this is a very unique opportunity to hear him. And, you know, Stephen presented for us last year, but again, we're able to take him west and provide the attendees with the information that he has to offer.
All right. Well, it's a great opportunity. Again, more information on the website at usdf.org. Is there anything else that members should know about, Cathy, in booking these and attending?
All the information is on the website as far as the registration deadlines. We'll be sending some other information out through e-news, but really they can grab their information off of the website for both of these events.
All right.
And we would like to welcome Adequin on board as our title sponsor this year. Adequin does so much for so many things for us, and we are fortunate to have them on board for the conference.
That's wonderful. Always grateful, as you say, to these loyal sponsors. Cathy, thank you very much indeed for coming on the program and sharing that with us. Again, go to the website at usdf.org for more information about these trainers' conferences, which take place in January and March of 2016. In October of 2015, the USDF Sport Horse Prospect Development Forum, presented by Dressage at Devon, was held at Shannondale Farm in Alpharetta, Georgia, where Scott Hassler and Willie Arts served as the presenters. Regina Milliken was one of the riders selected for the forum, and she joins me now to talk about her experience at this and other sport horse forums. She is the manager of Oak Hill Ranch, the Danish warm blood stud in Folsom, Louisiana. Welcome to the program, Regina.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate being here.
Let's start with what you do there, Regina, at Oak Hill Ranch in Folsom, Louisiana.
I'm the young horse trainer, or the trainer in general, at the farm. We do everything from foaling out to halter breaking in the first few years of life, and then starting them under saddle, bringing them along for either show ring and further training or sales prospect. It's a breeding farm, so a lot of our horses, of course, go to sale. And my job is to put a very good foundation on them so anybody that comes to try them understands the system, basic training pyramid system, go forward, nice connection, well-behaved horses, as well as a safe environment for people to try those horses, that everything is understandable. They come in, I tell them what to expect when they get on the horse, try to be very honest and ethical in our sales, and go from there. And the other thing I do is supervise all the equine health and services for the horses. I consider myself kind of an air traffic controller. When it goes, I just point everybody in the right direction and give them the instructions that they need, and they do what they're very good at.
And, of course, those who follow Oak Hill Ranch will know that Paragon and Ripline, ridden by Heather Blitz, are two of the horses that were produced there. Tell us who else are your star pupils, we should say.
Laura Noyes has got Galveston, who's done very well up north, and Faith Morris has Garrison, who's doing very well in Texas. He's at I-1 right now, or completed I-1. He's starting I-2. I think Laura Noyes and Galveston are heading towards the Grand Prix ring this year. Both obviously very good. Kim Gentry has a horse named Leonardo that when he was at Oak Hill, his name was Rendez. He's of that same bloodline, the R line. And he's done well with Kim. So those are the three off the top of my head I can think of. But there's many amateurs out there riding Oak Hill horses doing well in the ring. Oak Hill's been breeder of the dressage breeder of the year in 2012. They won it. 2013, they were runner up. 2014, they won it again. And this year, they're runner up to Hilltop again. So they're really right in the money for producing horses that go in the ring and perform.
Well, we want to talk about sport horse, young sport horse development, Regina, because obviously as the trainer of young horses there, that is something that you study intensely to be up to date with trends and what's out there in the market, of course. So let's tell the story of how that all began, because I believe your first step was going to a seminar at Scott Hassler's.
Yes, every year. Well, for the past 5 years I've attended, but it was a 10-year program. The Young Dressage Horse Trainer Symposium was put on up at Hassler Farm, and I got to witness, along with many other trainers, some very good young horses come along with great coaching from the ground and see them progress over a three-day period. And the atmosphere is set up to be supportive of training. It's not an audited clinic. You have to be a trainer to get into it, a young horse trainer, to audit and watch these riders come in, and it's all trainers coming in on their horses. So it's supportive and an open atmosphere for questions and interacting. There's no criticism. It's really a positive environment. And networking, you get to meet a lot of other young horses. From that, I started to follow the Hassler page and see what was going on with them, and saw that they have this sport horse development program that Scott was launching, that with Ingo Pape, I believe, was the first year it came out. And I linked up to that and decided to try to audit one of those seminars, which was based more on 3-year-olds instead of 4, 5, and 6-year-olds. So that's how it started.
And from there, of course, did you always take a horse with you, or were you going as an auditor?
The first time I attended the developing forum, I went as an auditor, and that was in 2013 in Massachusetts. Really was surprised that when they said it was going to be 3-year-olds, it was at least half 3-year-olds and a couple 4-year-olds. And good to see horses working in a very consistent format, very good coaching, really coaching forward, following the training scale, supportive environment, no negative situations. Everybody was coached through if their horse got into a challenging situation or something where there were some reactions that might be considered a little bit naughty on the part of the horse. It was handled in a very calm way, coached through the situation. The riders were coached through the situation in such a supportive environment. Again, no criticism of anybody, no criticism of the horses. Everything was objectively discussed in a very professional atmosphere. And it was attractive to me as a trainer that this is an environment for young horse trainers to come to and bring young horses to, where you can say, hey, this is the reality of young horse training. What can we do from here?
Well, that, of course, would have given your horse confidence coming out of, you know, a scenario like that. What else did you take away, Regina, from that experience with him?
From the first time seeing it, I think it's just the consistency from one session to another. Every single horse that came through, every single rider that came through, Scott and Ingo handled it with such a calm and patient state of mind. If the horse was throwing its head or bucking a little bit or being a little bit what we would consider naughty, nothing was a big deal. No big deal. Just keep going. Just keep going. And that reinforces just good training. And it's good to see, you know, you go in and don't really know what to expect the first time you see a venue like this. It's the only one in the country that I know of set up towards young horses. So you don't know what to expect. You know, horses can be unpredictable always. Riders have all kinds of different philosophies, and there's not such a consistent training system in the U.S. for young horses to come along. So this was the first time I had really seen all young horse theories put into practice, other than we all can pick up a book and read about how to train and break out a young horse and get it started under saddle. There's information ad nauseum on how to get this program started. But there's no venues where you can witness young horse training that it's just very consistently be patient, be kind, set a system up that works for your horse, get help from others, and be supportive of others when they're working through issues, coach each other, coach your horse, don't get in a corner, don't get in conflict, just work through the problem. And I think really taking away from this program is what you see every single lesson is that it's just coach, 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 coach. Don't get upset.
So would that be the headline as far as you're concerned in terms of what you took away from it?
Yeah, I would say so. They address the basics, get everybody forward. Most horses want to back off behind the leg when they're young. They really don't quite understand forward. You have to teach it and reinforce it and teach it and reinforce it. And it can be a bit tedious. And then at the other end of that, it's the horse that wants to run too much. So, of course, it goes back to rhythm, establishing rhythm. And those things get addressed. But overall, I feel like the spirit of it is individual training programs with patience, with coaching, to be successful. And to support other trainers and have other trainers support you, that there's a feeling of a bonding there, that it's non-critical. Everybody help each other. And I think Scott, working with any trainer he works with, it really pervades that feeling. Just brings it to the head that this is what this is about, and this is how this country can succeed with young horses and have those young horses go on up through the levels to FEI, is that at this foundation, there needs to be a good coaching system, that it has to start right there at the beginning. And it can't be a critical system. It can't be a harsh system. That it needs to be just a system, systematic in its own term, that we bring these horses along a way that's prescribed, that doesn't have any temper in it, that we don't become angry as trainers. We don't lose our patience. We just keep going back to that training scale and addressing the challenges that come up by using the information that is passed along during these venues, during it, in using the training scale.
Now, did this change your tools in any way as a trainer, Regina, since you've been attending these forums and sport horse development programs? Or was it just information that you knew and techniques that you already were applying, it just reinforced them?
I think if I had attended this training program when I was 20, it would have been revolutionary to me, because at that point, I was probably a much more aggressive trainer than I am at this point in my life. But 20 years later, it reinforced everything that I have learned in the last 20 years. But think of how far I could be in my training system if I had learned all this stuff 20 years ago. That to be very patient, to be kind, to just coach, to not push, to not get in that head-to-head challenging match with my horse and say, that's it, I'm going to win. That instead just coach it through and leave the passion, some of that, behind a little bit and keep it on a cool, low burn and go into it that way. That stuff I've learned on my own, because you learn stuff in life and reality comes in. And horses teach you a lot. But this venue, I feel, sets that up for other people to learn much earlier in their training careers. And I feel like it reinforces all the right and necessary things to train a young horse and exemplifies it. It doesn't just talk about it. It exemplifies it from no matter who the coach is, that they coach the same way. And the riders, they ride very consistently. They address the same issues over and over and over again with patience.
So no matter where you are in your career, this would be advantageous to take part in this and watch the development of it over time as well. What would you say to these people, Regina, or anybody who's thinking of attending either a development forum or any of those development programs for sport horses?
Absolutely. Of course, I think people should attend it. And it's evolving. It's going to evolve more. I hope it continues to grow. That as trainers, we can always benefit from seeing good coaching and from experiencing good coaching and taking a young horse to a venue where things will be so properly addressed toward that age level. There's not so many places where you want to take a three-year-old out in public with people around and have somebody else get into how you're training that horse, because an FEI trainer may not address the same thing that you need to have addressed when you're riding a 3 or 4 year old. It needs to be geared towards their mentality, that young horse's mentality. And this venue really does that. And it's a very, again, safe and supportive. I can use that term over and over again, but it's a supportive environment to do that in, to take a young horse into. And as an auditor, you might pick up something on just how to coach somebody else that's riding a young horse. Or if your trainer is riding one of your young horses, you guys might both take away something that's a little gem that you didn't think of on your own. And it will reinforce, for people that have been doing this a long time and doing it well, it reinforces the things that you use every day. It's nice to see to have that affirmation that, yes, I am going down the right path, I am doing this the right way, and all these other people are on that same path too, and we can support each other, and we can see that end goal of having these horses do well and continue to do well and continue to develop and have the good horses of this country continue to go along in that system and know that they'll be successful because it's a successful system.
Well, I'm sure you were taking notes, Regina. Did you have any favorite tips that you took away?
Yes, I did. The constant idea that rhythm is the leading edge in everything else in the training scale. We can look at it on a piece of paper, again, all day long. You can hear it all day long. But to see it in action, rhythm has to be there before anything else. That most horses lack a true forward, but some, again, can be more of a running horse. So that has to be addressed before anything else. Patience was the other thing that I saw a lot come up, that you coach the horse through difficult situations. There's no negative pressure, consistent coaching, build a partnership, build a confident and trustful foundation. And then the third thing was create an individual training plan for each horse, that they're all unique and they all have individual temperaments that have to be addressed.
And remember to come back next year.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much indeed for sharing your experiences with us, Regina, and coming on the program today.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that I was invited.
And in our final segment this week, we hear from Kimberly Bench about what to expect when considering a position as a working student and also what employers should expect. Kimberly, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're joining us from Grand Rapids, Michigan. And I would like to start, Kimberly, if you would, telling us a little bit about your business and what you do up there with your dressage program.
Okay. Well, Benchmark Dressage is located just outside of Grand Rapids, as you said, and we provide our emphasis is really education focused. So we have a lesson and training program. We also offer boarding to our clients, but we also have a working student program as well. So we have an active team both at the GMO and USCF level. And as part of our program, we try to participate frequently in clinics, shows. We have almost 50 regular weekly students in our lesson program in our academy. And we do those all as private lessons because we feel that dressage is in the details. And so all of our programs are structured to try to give the best education possible to ourselves and our clients.
And I understand you began your career as a working student.
Yes, it was actually considered a co-op through my high school with one of our local barns, but it was essentially a working student position. It was my senior year of high school, and I did everything from mucking stalls, turnout feeding, exercising some horses, scrubbing troughs, you name it, pretty much anything that needed to be done. And then just over the years, I moved from there. I went off to college, and then after returning from college, I started just visiting that local barn again. And before I knew it, I was subbing some riding lessons. And now for the next 15 years, I've kind of just worked my way up, and now I have my own place.
Now, we know that the working student program around the world literally is a great start for young people to get into the sport of dressage. Give us an idea of some of the things that they should be looking for generally, Kimberly, you know, when they want to start a career and they want a working student program, there must be some pros and cons that you would explain to them at the onset.
Yes. One of the advantages of being a working student is that the level of detail and breadth of the experience that you're going to get cannot really be duplicated in a classroom or a book. So it'll really give you a very realistic idea of what a career in horses actually feels like. I see a lot of students post-college with an equine degree that have a lot of really good knowledge, but not necessarily hands-on actual day-to-day experience. So the little details that you don't think of, like ponies coming in with an injury in the morning or something like that. So they really get to see what an actual day looks like. And so the best way for that to get started is first get involved with a barn somewhere, whether as a student or a volunteer, or even just an observer. I grew up in the suburbs and my parents didn't quite get the whole horse obsession thing. So I literally spent a lot of time just watching lessons. I took my own lessons, but I was watching a lot in between and volunteering to help around the barn, and little by little opportunities trickle in. Opportunity to hand walk a horse that needs to get out of a stall if they're on stall rest, or an opportunity to learn how to put on a standing ramp or something like that. So just getting in the barn and making those contacts with the trainers and barn managers is, I would say, the best way to get started.
What kind of documents should students be looking for in terms of explaining what that program is going to involve, Kimberly?
Yeah, I would say the communication of what is offered and what is expected is probably one of the biggest problems that I hear from other professionals and from students that have come over to me from other programs. The first thing is that I think get everything in writing. We provide contracts to all of our employees and working students. So even the volunteers will have something in writing that outlines the expectations of the employer. So what we provide and the expectations of the employee or working student. And it's, really important to check, too, that your barn has proper insurance. We are covered by liability insurance, but also workers' comp. And a lot of barns don't necessarily have those things in place. So I would say that's actually a really important thing, because it does protect both the barn and the working student in the case of an accident or anything like that. And it just kind of speaks well to a barn's legitimacy, I feel. As far as getting into those positions, I think it's very important that these young people have a resume. And it may just list, I've been taking lessons from XYZ down the road for 10 years, or I volunteered at summer camp helping muck stalls, for 2 years. Those things are practical experience that is applicable in the barn. So I think it shows a lot of initiative and also a professional attitude from a potential working student to provide those things to a potential employer.
You know, and often young people will say, well, I don't have any credentials. I don't have much experience up mm-hmm. until this point. I want to get into a career with horses. What would you say to them, Kimberly, in terms of their level of experience and involvement around the barn and the safety issues, the kind of basics that they need to bring with them on the first day?
Yes. Oftentimes, the people that approach me for a position have no actual experience. Like, some of them have never even touched a horse in real life. And that does present, especially as the barn, a huge liability. So that's why I said earlier to definitely get involved with your barn first. I don't take any working students who have not been involved somewhat in our program as a student. And our program is focused on dressage, but also horsemanship. So all of our students learn the basics of safe handling, proper tacking, proper grooming, what to do in your basic emergencies, your horse spooks or your horse breaks across that. I mean, all of those things. Things that you can't just explain to somebody in an interview. So I think their very first step is to get involved with a barn for at least a year and be there as much as possible. If you can take multiple lessons a week, that's great. If not, see if you can volunteer, even just scrubbing buckets, because being in the environment, you will learn. And there's just no substitute for barn time or saddle time. So they really need to start there and work their way up. So the biggest thing, too, that I see is students coming in, they want to have my job when they don't even know how to properly hook up a halter. And that's obviously a problem. They need to be willing to start with something that's very safe, like scrubbing a bucket or picking a stall, and work their way up to horse handling. The exercising and training comes after only many years of hands-on experience so that they can handle any situation that comes to them.
Well, that brings me to another question, Kimberly. We know that a lot of these girls aspire to be riders themselves, professional riders, mm-hmm. and they're very ambitious about just their riding program and not spending enough time in the barn and understanding that it begins in the barn, as you just explained. What would you say to these young people? Is there a trial period where you can assess what their ambitions are in reality once they get in the barn and are doing the day-to-day duties?
Yes. Again, I would definitely say it's that entry-level involvement. The girls that we promote, so to speak, to more responsibilities such as grooming and tacking for us, the professionals, or giving them actual hands-on care with the animals themselves, they have worked to that position. They don't start out there. We have two basic tracks, I guess you could call them, here at Benchmark. And we pretty much start everybody out in the barn management program. So they would shadow our barn manager and learn the things like how to properly clean a stall, how to properly clean and sanitize buckets, how to measure feed. And then once they show that they can handle that responsibility, because as we know, even something as simple as feeding a horse is very important and it needs to be done with care and precision. So if I see a student that can't be trusted to properly measure feed, I'm not going to allow her to take a horse and handle it. So, you know, everything is really a hierarchy. You come in, you start at the bottom, you show that you're willing to put in the time, you show that you're willing to put in the hard work. Because the students that are really passionate about being a professional are more than happy to do those things. I have one girl who is now a senior in college, and she's been with me since she was a little kid. And she's always been one to put in hard work. And so she's worked her way up from cleaning stalls and the very basic, you know, hard work to now she assists with some of the training horses and she assists with some of the lessons. And so she's really progressed, not just from accumulating all those skills, but also from showing us that she's willing to work really hard and that it's truly in her heart. That's, I think, what it comes down to, is those of us that it's truly in our heart and part of who we are, it's just another step in our journey. And so we don't look at it as something we don't want to. It's just part of the big picture. And you can tell that really quickly as a professional when you're start working with some of these young girls, usually, but young kids. And you can tell pretty quickly who's going to float to the top and who's not going to make it long term.
Well, dedication and discipline, of course, are key. And also being realistic about the daily schedule and the weekly schedule and how much of a long day it is going to be for them and their willingness to be flexible, Kimberly.
Yeah, it's not a glamorous business, and I don't care where you're at in it. You know, even the very top riders that have full-time grooms and everything like that, I'm pretty sure that they still put in extremely long days and they still get dirty, especially when you have your own place. I think I work harder now than I ever did as a working student for somebody else. There's not a 9-to-5 part of this. It's long days. It's cold days sometimes. It's hot days other times. And just when the weather's the nastiest is when you have the most work. It just doesn't go away. It doesn't go away for holidays. It doesn't go away for prom. It doesn't go away for sickness. And so it really, truly has to be deep in your heart that this is really what you live and breathe and really find who you are in this job. But if that's not really deeply in your heart, it won't work out because it's not glamorous. You know, there's a couple pieces of it, you know, when you win at a major show or, you know, maybe have a really fantastic ride, but the stuff in between is not glamorous. And so I think that's a shock sometimes to these kids. They see those of us who have been working for 20, 30 years at it and think, wow, that's great. I want to go do that. So they come in and they'll work for us for 2 months and expect to have our job. And it's just, frankly, it's just not that way.
And also they need to understand the physical demands of the job too, especially if they've not been exposed to it before and the hard work, the heavy lifting.
Absolutely. My clients kind of always tease me because they'll say, gosh, I don't feel like I did anything today, or I didn't go to the gym and work out. And they always tease me because they're like, oh yeah, I just threw up 20 bales of hay for dinner. And, you know, I don't even think of that as exercise anymore. But yeah, I mean, even just the simple fact of, you know, most of my day now is either riding or teaching. We have a full staff here that handles the majority of the barn management side of things. But even so, we're on our feet 12, 15, sometimes more hours a day. We're getting on and off horses and working horses. And even between all that, we're sweeping the aisle and we're, you know, cleaning tack and things like that. So there's just an endless amount of work. And even with a very great staff, and we're well staffed and we have great people, but there's just an endless amount of work that needs to be done. So there's constant labor for sure.
What would you say to young people who are contemplating coming into the career using a working pupil position to get them started in terms of what they should expect and what it can do for them for their career?
Yeah, I think anyone who wants to pursue a horse business career should take a working student position for at least a year. Find a barn or trainer who's in the industry you want to work for. So if you want to get into high-performance dressage, try to get into a barn where you'll be exposed to that world. And you may have to work yourself up to that. You know, you're not going to get hired in an FEI barn without some hands-on experience at maybe your local trainer's barn or national level barn. You know, you've really got to work your way up just like in any other business. But I get asked a lot about an equine related college degree, and I think those are a great supplement, but nothing quite compares to hands-on experience at a working farm. I personally have a business degree, and I think that's helped me immensely because you still have to know how to deal with people, manage inventory, keep the books, etc. So I first, you know, I get asked that question quite a bit, like, how can I get into this business? And I always tell students, get a really good education, do well in high school, go on to college. But while you're doing that, be in the barn as much as you can, and link up with those local professionals, maybe your local GMO, job shadow. I did that early in my professional career. I studied under a silver medalist, and I would literally drive an hour and a half once or twice a week and just watch her ride and watch her teach for a couple more hours in the morning. And I learned so much from that. There's a lot you can learn from the corner of an arena or just observing, and then ask if you can help. Those little things like helping to cool out a horse or how to properly groom, that's going to set you apart from somebody who doesn't have those skills looking for the same position that you're looking for. And, you know, locally, a lot of my peers and I talk about the working student problem. One, it's really hard to find working students, even with paid positions. When I was a kid, we didn't get paid. We were lucky if we got a little extra riding or, you know, got to pet some horses, but we didn't get paid financially. And nowadays, I can't even get somebody at $10 an hour to do these types of positions. It's very rare. I do have a high school student that works for me right now, and she's a true working student. So she lives with us. She spends about 5 hours a day at the barn grooming and tacking for us. And then she works on her schoolwork the other hours of the day and then goes home on the weekends. But I think that's a great place to start, is just really being in the trenches on a day-to-day basis, seeing exactly what goes into running a facility, the hard work, the long hours. And if you don't love it, then it's probably not going to be the right career choice for you. Because those of us that really love it, even when it's negative 20 degrees out and all the horses are in and angry because it's so gross outside they can't go, and you've cleaned stalls 3 times that day, you still go in at night and think, you know what, I had a really rough day, but I still wouldn't trade it for an office job.
And also, Kimberly, there's the employer's responsibility too, the other side of the picture.
Yeah, I see this problem on both sides. One, the employers having difficulty getting hardworking students, but also working students who've had poor experiences working for other professionals. And I think sometimes trainers feel like they were used and abused when they were kids, and so they almost haze these working students as some sort of weird rite of passage. And I've heard horror stories from kids who are coming in from other programs. The biggest complaint that I hear from them is that they were promised a lot of things that were never delivered, usually riding or lesson opportunities. But I think as professionals, we only harm ourselves and the industry by giving these kids bad experiences. If we want to attract good, hardworking kids, then we really need to treat them fairly and honor our end of the deal as well.
Yeah, very good advice. And of course, they can find more information on this in the USDF Connection magazine about working pupils. Thank you again for coming on the program, Kimberly.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
And you'll find a link in our show notes to the article that was written by Kimberly on being a working student in the October issue of USDF Connection magazine, entitled 10 Tips for a Working Student. Our thanks to all our guests this week, and don't forget you can find more information on the Adequan USDF FEI Level Trainers Conferences and all the other educational opportunities here at the USDF by visiting the website at usdf.org and following the link to the education calendar. You'll find also other educational items geared to dressage riders on the eTrack Online Learning Centre. This podcast is available for download from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app. Thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember that the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.